Can we continue? Can we continue with the meeting? Can you put your hands down? We continue with the meeting. Honorable Chani.
No, see, I think we are almost agreeing. I mean, there's no need for all these things. All what you are requesting is for all this, even Vodacom and MTN, when they come, we are not interested to know how many subscribers you have. All what we are interested is on the work progress. Make things simple for us. As you talk percentages, particularly in the number of those we have not as yet recut. If it's 10, you can simply say we've got 10 people that have not recut based on the challenges that we have presented. Simple as that. I don't think that one needs privacy or something. It's the actual facts of the number of people that you have not been able to reach because of the challenges you have already cited. Simple.
I think that the fear for the committee is that when the deadline comes, we should have another application requesting extension. So if we can have that presentation, we will be in a position to know the kind of progress that has been made.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that it will be fair then to provide you, the committee, with the broken down numbers of the categories then that we stipulated as unregistered, agricultural and rural. So we will provide the committee with those numbers.
Okay.
Thank you.
And you can continue further.
Okay, if I remember well, one of the questions that was asked by my fellow colleague next to me is sharing devices. So basically what we're stipulating in terms of devices, the devices that we're talking about are RICA implementation devices that are capturing the information, storing the information, and just making the information secure for RICA purposes. So that's what, as operators, we have an argument on. It doesn't necessarily relate to network. It's just a RICA implementation device that we have as operators. Another question, I believe, was in terms of the rural areas, why do we need the information? Because we know the nature of our country, that people that are there are illiterate people. So basically our concern there is mainly addresses. And I think the problem is, as well, if someone is recurring with information that is incorrect, we do not necessarily have a way of knowing whether that information is correct or not. And initially when we mentioned that we want government to be part of this, and we mentioned that postal services would also be required to fast track and to make this process easier, is to ensure that as government we complete our postal service of ensuring that everybody has a registration address in rural areas. I know in some areas that this is in existence. In my area, for instance, we do have an address. So we're saying basically it would help if that process as well, along with the RICA, can be combined and more in conjunction, basically. So that's what we're saying, because we understand the illiteracy and the problems that we encounter in rural areas. Okay. My colleague will qualify that as well. Thanks.
Chair, on the issue of verification of IDs as well, I think in terms of looking forward, remember that in terms of implementing the interception as well, it becomes important that whoever is going to be intercepted, if from the onset we got incorrect information, it might make it even difficult during the implementation of the policy. So that's why the verification is a very important process, so that we don't have any breakdown within the whole process when the Act itself is implemented. So we're trying to cover up that one. That's why it's important for the verification. Thanks.
Thank you. The same answer basically will also apply. I think somebody mentioned farmers without IDs and addresses. They will also
foreigners.
Actually, that will also, they will also fall under that category, because whether that you're an SA citizen or a foreign citizen, if you're undocumented, what it means is that you will lose your service if you don't have ID. So I guess as well, it goes back to the challenge and the problems that we have as government as far as that part is concerned. and not getting IDs in time or not getting them at all at times. So I think the same information or we can qualify as whether you're South African or not to fall under the same category, basically. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was those were all the questions that we received, unless somebody can just remind me of outstanding questions that we have.
Just as a follow-up.
Yes.
On the question of sharing, you pointed out that the sharing is the sharing of the RICA information.
Yeah, the devices, but is the information also shared? Does that mean that if Mr. Bloom is registered with Cell C, because he's got a Cell C phone, that means he doesn't have to reapply when he's got an MTM phone. That's the question.
Through you, Chair. No, it doesn't mean that at all. As you know, that the legislation actually has strict requirements in terms of security and how we keep this information. So that information is secured and kept that way. If you get another SIM card or you go to another operator, that will mean you'll have to be registered for that particular new SIM card in question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. For me, it's not a question, it's my concern as a man who was born in the rural area 52 years ago. But in the rural area, if Ngabega is a word in our areas is a good, this is Ognes Nduna call. All most of the people, because it's no physical address, because the new summer come is a good, is a pure box. Which that thing, both you as a service provider and parliament, Ningaibu Aranjan, Lord, but when you're in the Royal Palace, there's no house number there, just the palace. And then there's a meaning to Zavala. There's a problem just in South Africa. Over the rural area, 65% of the people of this country is staying in the rural area.
Because I know Honorable Mukobe has asked this particular question, that because people have got IDs, they've got IDs, they are voters, they're doing all that. Because of this problem that has been raised around rural areas, are the IDs not sufficient? Are the IDs not sufficient to can assist this particular? Because I know possibly the department will assist in answering this. Because we are saying, these people, when they apply for IDs, they must have some address. They must have some address. Is that address not sufficient, to assist the process? And lastly, Chair, when we asked for the numbers, we were not asking as to what percentage of shares does the DA have in that process.
Honorable Bloom, maybe I can answer that one of the DA, but it's confidential information. I can't deal with it. Chairperson, I have asked a question. Is this an information session or what? And maybe it's directed to you. But let me ask this question. I see that in one of your recommendations, you are saying you are proposing a task team of justice, communication, and home affairs. Are home affairs not on board on this whole process? Because I thought that home affairs is central to this thing, because it has to do with ID. You must produce your ID when you are. You are doing this process. So this committee, I need clarity. Was it only justice and communications or what? To your question, Honorable Bloom, we met with the Department of Justice last year in Kwakwa. I'm not sure whether you were part of that meeting or not. And we agreed that the committee should be kept abreast with the progress.
So with other words, there's already a decision taken for the extension of this process.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will follow it up.
Okay. Honorable, what's
that? That's why I asked the question in the beginning. Why now? Why were we never involved before? That was my question. Maybe you can answer it. Yeah, I don't know.
I can't answer that. Chair, thank you. Perhaps I can help. You will recall that the deadline for the registration of historic customers of the service providers, that's Cell C, MTN, and Vodacom, the deadline for the registration of those customers was the 31st of December 2010, last year. Towards the end of last year, it became clear to the department that the service providers will not be able to comply with that deadline. And they also indicated that to us by way of numerous meetings that we had with the service providers. We also submitted towards the middle of last year a report to Parliament indicating exactly that, that it was our impression that the service providers will not be able to comply fully with the deadline of the 31st of December of last year. We then had to take a decision whether that deadline should be extended, and it was submitted to Cabinet, and Cabinet decided that the deadline should be extended. It was then indicated that it would be extended until the 30th of June of this year. In other words, the service providers were given a further 6 months within which then to register their customers. What must be borne in mind is that if a customer is not registered, I'm talking about an historic customer, is not registered by the deadline, his or her cell phone communication will be stopped. We indicated to Cabinet and also to this committee, as you rightly indicated, we met in Kuta de Chaba, in the Free State, when the department briefed the committee on the suggested extension of the deadline. And we indicated the reasons why we felt it should, the deadline should be extended. It was a fairly lengthy meeting. The reasons that were provided to us by the service providers were put forward on the table. The committee then expressed concern about the fact whether, even with the extension, in other words, even if we extend the deadline until the end of June, the 6 months period, the committee was concerned that the service providers would not even reach that deadline. And it specifically related to the customers that are situated in the rural areas, because it appeared that that was in fact a problem for all the service providers to get those people registered. In the city areas, it is not that a big problem, but especially in the rural areas. And the committee was very concerned about that. And the committee then felt that very early in this year, the service providers should come to this committee and explain what it is that they are doing and what it is that they are going to do to ensure that people in the rural areas will not be without their communication instrument by the end of the deadline, which is the 30th of June of this year. It was also stressed that this deadline will not again be extended. This is the final deadline, and if people are not registered, and I must say that all the service providers accepted that. In the meeting with the minister, they had a meeting with the minister, it was stressed that this would be the final deadline by government, and they should not once again try to have that deadline extended. This would be the final deadline. And then the committee made it quite clear that they would want to know what it is that
the service providers are going to do to ensure that they reach the deadline of the 30th of June of this year, to ensure that people will not be without their cell phones by the end of June. So that is the reason why we accepted the committee called the service providers to this meeting. Chair, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can you summarize so that we give other presenters? But can you also, as it has been indicated, assure us that come June, rural people will have been reached. Those who have cell phones.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as my stats and percentages indicated, we don't necessarily have much outstanding so far, and we are pretty confident that with all the initiatives that we are right now currently still running through to rural areas, we are pretty sure that we'll be able to register all the subscribers that we have historically, that is, because going forward, everybody that is buying a new phone with a SIM card registration is automatic. So we are pretty sure, and we assure you that will happen. So I think we've answered all the questions. The last thing that was mentioned in terms of the addresses and IDs, well, as it is clear that you cannot really recover without both, and in terms of our rural areas, basically, as we've mentioned, we do think that government can pitch in and assist us as far as that is concerned, because we do currently accept correspondences and letters of confirmation of an address of an individual from schools and chiefs and indunas, because that's the only thing we can do. But it becomes problematic because at times legitimacy of that can be questionable. I'm from a rural area. We once had a store. Half the people that were there didn't know. So it would have been a problem for me to give a confirmation to those people whilst I myself am not aware of that from a school or a local school or from one of those communities. So that's basically the issue here. So I think that's about all that we had in terms of the issues for RICA and the progress. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Then in closing, I think just the issue around
just before you close, another one.
Yeah, thank you. I still have fear, but I wanted to make maybe a serious recommendation, you know, especially on documentation for verification. I'm not sure from which point where we can make a decision. Precisely because members of parliament are commissioners of oath, and if a stamp of a commissioner of oath maybe is not verifiable, it's a question. Because in the constitutional office we do help assist in that type of thing, where these people doesn't have numbers, stamps, and whatever. You are able to verify, you are able to put a stamp to confirm that. But if it's going to have a problem at this RICA level, then we need to come out with something. I don't know what. Maybe we need to put minds and have a decision that will assist our people, because we are here simply because we represent the people who are poor. We cannot access law or whatever the case may be. I think we need to put up something. Can
you can close.
Thank you, Chair. I think just as a matter of emphasis, the issue around the task team, it was primarily just to recommend to the committee that the departments that we've identified has got a huge role to play in this process, particularly on an outreach program, because we believe that if one takes, for example, the way the World Cup processes happened in terms of communication, it becomes very important for all electorates to understand the impact of RICA, the implementation of it as well. So that's why communication for the post office, home affairs for the IDs, COPTA for the traditional and the local government, particularly with ward councillors, including GCIS for communication. So that's, I mean, there could have been those, I must say, because I'm still new within the SSLC, but if there were those task team, I think it's just a matter of emphasis that towards the June deadline, I think it needs to be a collective effort so that we make sure that everybody knows the implication and the benefits of having a RICA country as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we now hand over to MTN? And before MTN continues its presentation, honorable members, we received a letter directed to the committee, and it read thus. MTN herewith acknowledges receipt of your letter dated 25 January in relation to the above and thanks the select committee for the invitation to the meeting on the 9th February. We confirm that MTN will make presentation to the select committee on the said date. MTN humbly requests that the presentation be held in camera. MTN Group Limited, as a listed company, is currently trading in a closed period in compliance with the rules of the JSE. This closed period will be lifted once the annual financial statements of the MTN Group have been published on March 2011. This closed period will therefore only come to an end after the presentation on RICA issues to the select committee on the 9th February. Under the JSE rules, MTN is not permitted to disclose price-sensitive information to a select group. If prior disclosure is to be made to a select group, this needs to be made under confidentiality arrangements. This information cannot be made public, and no one may trade by knowing this information. Consequently, we request that the meeting with the select committee be held in camera. We look forward to a positive response. General Maneza Grand, please. Honorable Bill.
Let me, Chairperson, thank you very much for this information. Is it still MTM's position to have this meeting in camera? Let me first hear that.
Honorable Chairperson, I don't know whether you would like us to start, or should we then start formally, or do you want us to
respond to his question? Yes.
Yes.
And dealing with
that
the
is still our view. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. Because I thought that they had a change of mind. That's why they are taking up their position. Yes. But Chairperson, no, this is Parliament. And this is an open forum. You see, the constitution of this country is saying that people must be informed, people must be kept informed on anything. I understand the sensitivity of even Chelsea raised it now. We don't want to hear about their shares in Johannesburg Stock Exchange and whatever. What we want is information about this sensitive thing of RICA. RICA is a very sensitive thing. Intelligence, information, and all that. We are interested in how many of their gadgets are being RICA, their customers, and all. I'm not interested personally. I don't have money, and I don't want to go in and the shares and whatever. But we want to hear from them the information that we want to hear. So I will oppose that thing of a closed meeting.
Honorable Matila.
Chair, I will agree with Member Bloom. The only problem that I have now is the way they have prepared their presentation might be problematic too. I mean, for an example, if it's going to be done through this technology, the reality of the matter is that information will go to the public because the media is here, everybody is here, and that might be a problem, you see. Therefore, if they can't change their presentation, I'll agree that the meeting will be held in camera, you see, because that's where the technicality will be in check, you see. But, yes, I agree with Member Bloom. If they can remove all those things, we don't want to hear as to how much shares Mr. Watson has in MTN, you see. Yeah, he's a good friend.
Honorable Zimande.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Chairperson, I thought that there is a difference between price and pricing and competitiveness of prices and all that to the RICA process itself. But I must also say, Chair, that in contrast to what Bloom is saying, that despite this being a public forum, rules of Parliament do allow, you know, for closed meetings. And I would not like people to go out understanding that it's wrong to ask for a closed meeting. We do attend that. So even in Bida must understand that there's rules of Parliament that provides for meetings, for closed meetings. Therefore, Chair, I would say that we didn't send out a template to the service providers that was forcing them or coercing them into providing sensitive information and that kind of thing. We are interested to the objectives of this meeting and the objective of this of the committee. Simple, Chair, to get a feel of the preparedness that the mission will be accomplished of registering people. Maybe as we've reached a consensus, Chair, earlier on CELSI, that they must focus on the unregistered subscribers. If there's anything that they would want, I mean that is to be presented to us relating to that. But therefore, Chair, I'm saying I don't find any persuasive grounds in the letter, Chair, except the pricing. And I don't think we need anything on pricing. That would then make us to say that the meeting be closed, Chair. Thanks.
Honourable Arthur.
Chair, I think that having considered the letter from the company, we must also consider the legal advice that we obtained, the legal opinion that we obtained at your request from our
I was going to conclude if that is what.
Okay. Well, I think that's what we need to look at.
Okay.
Particularly item 13 and 14 of that.
Yes, we sought a legal opinion from the parliamentary legal advisor. And I will not go through all the advice he has given, but the long and short is that he said, having carefully considered the provisions of the Constitution, the NCOP rules and the reasons for the request, as well as the nature of the presentation itself, I am of the view that no legal basis exists for the closure of the committee's meeting. And it is up to you to decide whether you want to continue with the presentation or not, but we are not going to do it as a closed session.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think maybe it's a little bit necessary to give a little bit of a background, because the letter on its own, maybe even the advice which is being put on, might be, as the interpretation might be a little bit without understanding the facts. I think our request to do the, in closing, we are quite comfortable to eliminate, to do the presentation to you, to the Honorable Chairperson and the committee, without necessarily disclosing the figures and the numbers. Because that will then be, in terms of the JSE rules, we are not allowed when we're in a closed period. We are in a closed period from the 1st of January until the 9th of March, when we announce our results for trading. So in terms of the listing rules, if we have to disclose any sensitive information or numbers, figures, that has to be done in a confidentiality manner. So if we have to disclose, so we can discuss the whole presentation, the contents of the whole presentation, what our activities, what we're doing. But I'm just saying, when we are willing to share with you in closed camera, if it comes to the stats or the numbers, because that will be, again, sort of, we're going to be breaching the JSE rules. That's the way the basis of the request was.
Okay, you can continue with the presentation. Honorable members, can you allow them to continue if the presentation is not giving that sensitive information. Honorable Matila.
No, Chair, the same can go for them as we have agreed with CELC, that they'll provide you with it, with the numbers in terms of information. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they can continue with the presentation.
Thank you. You can continue.
Honorable Chair, members of the committee, members also of the Justice Committee, and I see also there's members of the Department of Communication and also our competitors around. Morning, and it's a pleasure for us as MTN to give you a short presentation on our activities. As we stated also when we did the first presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Justice, we have undertaken in that meeting when we got the extension that we will be increasing our activities in terms of registering the sort of the number of the people we haven't, and also to increase our activities in the investment area. I think if we have to look at the first activity to date, where we are in terms of the existing our RICA campaigns initiative, I think in November we did make an undertaking that we will be increasing our investment RICA marketing campaigns and initiatives, and that means also in terms of also the investment. And if we have to look at, and also, so maybe if I can just take it in sort of an order, the order of the presentation will be, I'll look at our marketing activities to date, and then also I'll look at what we're doing by taking RICA to the people, and what we have done around our RICA point of presence, which was felt before that we need to increase, and we made an undertaking that we will be increasing our RICA presence. And I think if I were to share with you, I think in terms of the monetary terms of what we have done so far as MTN, I think we have invested more than 150 million since the effective date of RICA, which was 1 July 2009, up to today in terms of our RICA initiative. And we are, you know, continuing to invest significant financial amount and also human resource in our campaigns to ensure that we do RICA all our subscriber bases by come the 30th of June 2011. And only for this year, which is probably 6 months left, it's 5 months now because we're already now in February, we have made an undertaking, and we are going to spend also financially between 40 and 50 million in to make sure that no one is left unregistered come the 30th of June. And if we now look at the campaigns we have done in terms of taking RICA to the people, you know, we have what we call below the line, the RICA campaigns. And that means that where we go in terms of physical presence, go to the stadium, you look at the some of the aspects we take there when we go to the places like, you know, Alex Plaza, you can in the shop rides, in the stadiums, and also the if you look at the right, you got a RICA bus. These are sort of the scenes of which you see in the township also and all over in our country where we got in plus minus 30 RICA buses which are branded yellow, which are going into places, going into rural areas, going to townships, and encouraging people to register. And we have to date, in terms of our stats, we have gone into plus minus 6,500 points of presence. And this, again, is what I was talking to you about, including your taxi ranks, your hostels and mines. We have done some bus road shows. We've been to the taverns. We have done a door-to-door campaign where we go to people's houses and knock. We've gone to shopping malls, including also government departments, home affairs. We've been there. We've set our RICA presence there. We've also been to companies like APSA, Standard Bank, and also universities, you know, the parks, the gyms, you know, to ensure that we do not leave some of our people without with an excuse of saying that they have never been RICA'd because they didn't know where to go. And also, Honorable Chair, I think I would, in this instance, I will also show you a bit of a 4-minute video in terms of what we mean when we say RICA campaign, just to give you and an understanding of the committee of what we mean. And So we, I've just mentioned about going into rural areas and then into residential areas. And these buses, you know, they contain like a trailer with a stage of a sound system in terms of our youth, to attract our youth. And also in other areas we get DJs and people to play there to make sure people come to those activities and Riga. And we also provide an opportunity also when we do that for people to win some prizes like cell phones and other things. And then just to show you a 4-minute clip video of what we, of some of the things we do in terms of this Riga. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think if I may also just continue again, this was just an initiative just from our side to just show you that what we are telling you today is not just based on the paper. And I think you, without bragging, I think Honorable Chair, you'll understand, although the competitors are here might differ with me, that in terms of the marketing strategy, we have been almost, if you look at, on a daily basis, either on a TV or on a print media, you will find an advert about the RICA from the MTN or one of the initiatives. So that leads us also to, in terms of the above the line, what we call above the line, the marketing point, where we go into the radio, we go into the print media like the newspapers and also the TV. I have been myself also involved in quite a number of also radio and TV interviews, including also some member of the Department of Justice, where we went together also on TV to make sure that we appeal to our people, and then people understand that this is an initiative as a partnership also from both the operators and also the government. So that we have also, and we continue to do that, and even this year we also calendar, we've got a calendar of events in terms of the TV interviews and also the print media. And I've alluded previously that we've been to various touch points of like the Department of Home Affairs, Department of Transport, Labor, Health, Justice, Correctional Services, you know, police station, SRCs, and municipal offices, which we deal with also in terms of when every time we go into, also when we launch our CSI project where we do school connectivity, when all the municipalities are there, we also take that opportunity to reach our people, and also have also people also as a partnership from the police who join us, and also from the Home Affairs in terms of affidavits and health, where it's a joint initiative. So, and if I were to come to even to initiatives which we make in making sure that a customer, if you are an MTN customer, how do you know whether you are RICA'd or not? We also being on an advert and telling people the easiest way is just dial *131# and then it tells you whether your number is RICA'd. And those are some of the initiatives, and also in the website of the MTN for those who also go into the website to see whether they are also RICA'd. And some of the initiatives also, especially in the rural areas which we're doing as an MTN, from the technology point of view and investment point of view, we have invested a lot also in terms of the system, which is sort of give us a location of the density, high density of people who are not yet registered, so that when we focus our RICA people and our RICA buses, we don't just send them in there randomly. We look at our systems, and then it gives us that information, where is the highest number of people who haven't been RICA'd, which area, then we concentrate our marketing effort in towards that area. Well, we, just like even previously when I was listening to Celsius and saying that, I mean, we have even previously, even when we went to do the application for the extension, to say it's not that all these initiatives we are doing do not have some certain challenges. We do meet certain challenges. Similarly, challenges also in terms of the, especially in the rural areas. But since our presentation in November, we have significantly done a lot in terms of improving that situation, in terms of devising also the affidavits, which are much simpler and easier for them to complete. Of course, they still have to go and get the stamp, or whether go to the church or the retail shop, but at least now the people know. We also get some zoners, people, we call them zoners. These are the MTN people who will be wearing MTN uniform, and they walk around with something like a computer or a trolley, and they also then register people, and then so that is also assist, especially in the rural areas, in trying to complete the affidavit. And also, so while we're busy doing that, so in the rural areas, there's a challenge, as I was saying, that we do have also these challenges of you know, whether it's ID, whether it's affidavit, or whether it's, you know, I do not know what to do. But those challenges, I think I might be saying at the moment, we have come up with an MTN with a very, very aggressive strategy in terms of addressing that. And it will, we probably will remain to be seen probably towards the end of the deadline to see how effective it is, if there we need to improve or if there's anything we need to do. I have already spoken about the customers which have got a problem in terms of the ID and the template. And I think I'm going to just, these are just the pictures also of, just to show you our people, will, and this will, some of them will be the pictures taken also by the people who call these MTN zoners who are wearing a yellow thing, and others are, but when we do the campaign of what's happening in various areas. But that's for the purpose of the presentation, I just chose a few for you to show you what we mean by the zoners, people wearing this yellow thing, recurring people. And then you see the first one was in Konkobe district in the Eastern Cape. The second one was Fort Beaufort in the Eastern Cape also. And then we have Tehe's Hostel in Umlazi, KZN. Then we have the Shavisa also in KZN. And I think those are the ones I just chose, but we are all over, in even in Limpopo, Sekukuni, in Free State, everywhere. We have been having various campaigns, but I just chose a few just to indicate. And I think at the beginning, because Honorable Chair, I made a mistake, but not probably because we went into the issue debate about the camera, not introducing my team. I have Graham De Vries, who is the head of the regulatory, and I've got David Smart, which is also senior manager in regulatory. Then I also got Brian Whitford, which is also our regional manager for Western and Northern Cape, and myself also as Robert Mazonga, executive for regulatory services. Thank you.
Okay, honorable members, we can engage with the presentation. Honorable Mkhobi.
No, I'm just worried that the Mpopo is too casual in this.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. While understanding that the campaign has been done through the radio, the TV, but the problem was, all right, how did they cover the province, the widest of the province? Because, all right, I can name in Limpopo, you find that the place is so remote, but all right, they had the radio, if they're having a radio, but how did you reach them?
Huna dzibazi dzine dza kuchimbira ubva Giyani, Thohoyando, Butsafasi, dzichiko rika vatu. So zvino ndiyo ne
change just the point of order.
No.
Okay.
You can continue.
I was gonna come to him.
Okay.
Okay, Honorable Chair, I was gonna go back. I think let me go back. I was gonna also go in English. So I was saying to him that even in that area, we have been going through our buses. We have a geolocation which shows in terms of Kiani, Thohoyando, Malamlele, all those going through the border coming back to Mpumalanga. We have buses which are going there. There have been some initiatives also in terms of community radios, but the buses are also going on there and are also going towards that area also. And we also have the initiative. I think in 2 months' time, we probably will, if you're down there, you'll probably see some of the initiatives also.
No, Chair, just a reminder that they don't forget to do as we requested TCLC to do, to give you that information around the number. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I must be honest that this presentation of MTM is empty. I must be honest and straightforward. You see, the presentation of CELSI gave us information on their stats and progress. There's nothing in it, in this thing. Can we please have the step and progress in the whole? We don't want, you see, we have said that we are not interested in money and whatever, but this is not a, you see, this whole thing is full of pictures here. Pictures. 4 minutes, what is it? Bioscope, yes. Now, honestly, sir, really, we personally, I need some steps. There are progress. Steps and progress. Please, sir.
Can you respond to that?
Honorable Chair, I think that some of the of the steps we're going to be providing to the Honorable Chair, also to a select committee, because the steps, if we have to break down in terms of the steps, will give you the percentage. And that percentage is the one which is the figure which, on the 9th of March, when we do the annual announcement, our CEO will be announcing that in the results it becomes public of there is a progress in terms of the RICA, what our customer base is, the percentage, the total base of the total subscriber of MTN, of that total subscriber, how much subscriber has not been RICA to date, and that component, how is it broken down. And those are the results which will be announced publicly on the 9th of March. That's the one which is that we can, at the moment, going to be giving it to the committee, but in camera, because that will be breach of the JSE rules.
Yes. Chair, with other words, you see, CELSI gave us this test. They are saying they must give us in camera. You hear what I'm saying? What is the difference? What is the difference? Why can't they give us also this information that CELSI have given to us?
Chair, you see, the argument we had earlier was precisely because CELSI gave us part of the information. Did not give us in everything. They gave us what is remaining. And that was our problem, you see. And therefore, to me both, there's no information. You know, because we don't have sufficient information, even from CELSI. And that's what they wanted to provide that in camera, because that's the point they're raising, you see. They, in actual fact, they will be giving us better information than CELSI, because they will give us a total component of steps so that we can then make an informed decision upon that situation. And we hope CELSI will follow suit and do as what MTN would want to do to us. Thank you.
Yeah, I think under the circumstances, it will be proper that we allow Vodacom to give their presentation. When are we going to receive that information?
You allow Vodacom to be the same.
Even now, I'll give it tomorrow.
Okay.
No, Chair, I want to register my unhappiness about this presentation. I'm saying this presentation is empty. At least, CELSI have tried. And we were very harsh on CELSI, but now we are treating MTN as if they have done something. I just wanted to register that.
Can we now allow Vodacom to proceed? You can continue.
Yeah, we're just spelling out quickly.
Okay.
No, I can understand that you are from a rural area. You don't know.
I understand. No, you were very excited about the 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You can continue.
Honorable Chairperson, as well as honorable members of this committee, Vodacom takes this opportunity to express its gratitude for having offered the opportunity to present a progress report on the registration of a customer premised on the written legislation. To start the speech, the person has started to be appropriate for me to just explain the context in which Vodacom has accepted the invitation to come and do this presentation. So on the 25th of January, we received a letter of invitation from Honorable MP TMH Mfokeng, who is chairperson of the Select Committee on Security and Institutional Development. And essentially, paragraph one of the letter says the Select Committee in November 2010 approved the extension of the deadline for the RICAP Act registration for fraud. Cell phone operators trying to register a large portion of subscribers that are not registered. The Select Committee would appreciate a briefing to determine the progress made today and to explore possibly to assist the cell phone operators to reach the rural communities of South Africa. So it's within the context and spirit of the Select that we have prepared a presentation, and the agenda of the presentation is essentially progress to this point, initiatives that we undertook in December and January, and the way forward. And on this note, I'll probably also take the opportunity to introduce the Vodacom team. On my immediate time is Hassan Ray, who is essentially the person who is on the commercial side of RICA, who's driving the campaign to reach out to as many of our customers as possible. And next to Hassan, Pagamile Pongwane, who is the head of the Vodacom team. I'm right in the corner next to the gentleman who did the presentation on behalf of Chelsea, is Wellington Mappe, who is on our regulatory team, who at the operational level has driven all the initiatives around the legislation of better as it affects the company. Now, today, we've essentially registered about 80% of the base, and then we still have an odd 20% customer. Sorry, an odd 17% of customers and our base. It's on. So we still have an odd 70% or so of our base to still reach out. Perspective of challenges.
It has taken longer than anticipated for customers to understand the implication and the need to be recut. Of course, the greatest challenge has been with our customers who are in the peri-urban environments as well as the rural environments, largely because the main forms of media that we reach to reach our customers, such as TV and print, is probably not the traditional methodology that would one use to communicate with those customers. It's also a problem with respect to contract customers who generally didn't believe that they needed to be registered. And the reason for that would be operators would typically capture all the information of a postpaid customer. And when we said to them there was a requirement in RICA for face-to-face verification, it's something that was complicated, or a complicated message to convey. And it's an issue which, in the period preceding the amendment to the RICA legislation in December last year, we did take up with the Department of Justice as well as the Minister of Justice and the security agencies that are affected by this initiative. And while the Department of Justice showed some empathy to our concern, but it became immediately evident that the security agencies of the state don't quite understand the fact that we already have the information of our postpaid subscriber base, and that therefore there was no need for the face-to-face verification process of our contracts of the subscribers. And in the negotiations that led to the amendment of RICA in December of last year, we did put that as an issue, especially when we made the presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Justice. But what was very evident, it wasn't an issue that they were keen, for a number of, I would say, valid reasons, to entertain at that point in time. It's also a truism that most prepaid subscribers don't have proof of residential address. One member of parliament in this committee has articulated the concept called the Sigodi, trying to demonstrate that the address of any subscriber in a particular rural community wouldn't necessarily be a physical address, but it would be a Sigodi that is related to chief. I needed to point out, and I think the Department of Justice can bear us out on this, that the development of specifically the sections of RICA that apply to mobile operators evolved over a period of 7 years. And some of those issues were canvassed, and there was some form of accommodation, including like you can use a store as an address or a school. But what we found in practice is that it is difficult to reach out to those communities. And the reality is, unless we find creative solutions, the law as it stands today, and we're not making an appeal, we made a commitment to the Department of Justice and the Minister of Justice that we're not going to ask for further extensions come the 30th of June at 2011, and we'll stand by that commitment. But the reality is, if for some reason we can't comply with the requirements of the RICA legislation as it stands, a customer can't produce proof of address, or they don't have an ID, we will have to disconnect those customers because South Africa is a government of laws. Our companies exist within a certain regulated framework as jurisdiction, and what MTN referred to as some of the JSC requirements, some of those, especially the Companies Act, is if you exist as a juristic person and you demonstrate that you're a rogue company that doesn't seek or attempt to comply with the laws of the land, you can run into significant legal problems. So if RICO stands as it is, we will have to comply with it. And if it entails that some subscribers would need to be disconnected, unfortunately, we'll have to do that. Another point we make in our presentation, of course, is that especially prepaid customers, are mainly in rural communities. They are serviced by informal traders, and it's often not difficult to reach them through our official channels. But we try to be as creative as possible to reach out to them, and we'll continue to do so. Customer apathy is another area of our concern, when we'll show some steps later. But what has become evident in the South African environment is that unless a deadline is looming, people generally don't take any particular process seriously. And it's not just about subscriber registration for RICO purposes. A few years back, it played itself out when there was a change of the driver's license system. So what we've seen, like what we saw in December, November, when everybody was aware that come the 31st of December, it would be disconnected, the number of the people who are registering by each day increased exponentially. And then once the message was communicated around December, there is an extension, there has been a sudden drop of the number of people who are registering each day. Now, I think here we set out the initiative that we undertook in December and January for rural communities. We've sort of established permanent registration facilities. As an example, we've done this in Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and Mpumalanga. We've also set up permanent registration stations in walk-in customer care centers, voter care outlets, and voter shops. We're incentivizing our trade partners to ensure that they capture as many people as possible. We're placing RICO ads in SAPS community newspapers, and then we partner with retail stores such as Game to offer customers freebies. So we're taking all kinds of incentives to make sure that we do capture people. And if you were to ask the question, have we been successful or not, I think if we've captured like 80% of our base, it points to we have been reasonably successful, and you know, it remains to be seen what would happen in the next 6 months or so. And I think this is an illustration of some of the activities that we undertake, such as using containers to reach out to people. It is ads in the South African Police Service newsletters. We do RICO promotions. We set up stalls in malls. So we basically doing the best we can. And, you know, we're doing this principally because we want to comply with the law. But one has to admit that the way in which RICO has unfolded, the positive side from a commercial point of view, especially with respect to prepaid subscribers, is that it has enabled us to know our customers. And by knowing our customers, I mean that historically we used to capture the barest information that you can get on a prepaid subscriber. But what RICO has done is basically forced us to accumulate as much information as possible. From a perspective of the law enforcement agencies, it was for security reasons, but from a commercial point of view, we've come to know our customers better. So, I think a point we're trying to make in that slide is the apathy we're talking about with respect to the attitude of an average South African citizen to comply with a looming deadline. So unless the deadline is really looming, you're not going to capture many people. Or in December, because the law was only really amended, or it was approved by the president around the 1st of December, we got communication of that approval around mid-December. That's when we started communicating with our customers. And I think once it became evident that there was an extension of 6 months, around January, registration per day decreased to about 3,000, when before we were registering about 9,000 subscribers each day. The planned initiatives going forward, I think in both our discussions with the Department of Justice as well as the Portfolio Committee on Justice around October, November of last year, when we were basically making representation for the deadline to be shifted by another 6 months. The question that arose, or I think what the Department of Justice specifically wanted to know, you say you've registered at the time about 75% or so of your base, and you want an extension. You have to demonstrate to us what is it that you have done in the past, and what will you do differently to make sure that you register 100% or at least close to 100% of your base. And what we're demonstrating in that slide is that we've got a prepaid base of approximately 3 million people that still needs to be captured. And in terms of postpaid subscribers, it's just under 650,000 people. So essentially, we're saying we're going to up the ante. And I'll just give some illustration with respect to individuals on the contract side. As and when the upgrades become due for renewal, we'll make sure that they are recorded as a matter of course. We will also send letters to our postpaid subscribers who haven't been regarded, asking them to present themselves in a Voda shop or a Voda care store to ensure that they are recorded. We'll also communicate with them through SMSs. On the prepaid side, which is the most onerous, but the most people to reach out to, we'll make IVR announcements, and we'll basically make sure that we triangulate areas in groups of about 1,000 people and set up some station there, cluster to have those people registered. We'll go to malls, we'll go to taxi ramps. We'll use all the means at our disposal to ensure that we reach out to as many people as possible and have them registered. And of course, the question will always arise, what then happens come the 30th of June, let's say from the number of 3 million, we still have 2 million, 1.5 million people who are not registered. And from our perspective, we'd obviously want to keep those accounts alive, but the reality of life is you always have to balance a number of competing interests. So there is a commercial interest, but there's also a competing objective of the law enforcement agencies. We have essentially initiated the RICA project in order to combat organized crime. So if it comes to a point where we can't capture everybody, either because they don't have an address or, you know, because they're illegal immigrants in South Africa for whatever reason, will obviously be obliged to comply with the law, and we will have to disconnect those people. And on that note, Chairperson, I want to take this opportunity to thank you very much. And we're ready to take questions.
Thank you very much. I think to the three of you, even though you Vodacom is on the platform, don't you anticipate a legal challenge from the people who, for some reason, say they are foreigners, and then they've applied for the South African ID, and then their applications were declined? And those people in the rural areas who you were not able to reach, suddenly they find they have been disconnected. Don't you anticipate a legal challenge? Commissioner.
Look, I think there is always a possibility that some people who may not have been captured might want to institute legal proceedings. But the way structure and architecture of RICA has existed today, I think basically all the means have been explored to try and accommodate everybody. So, you know, we're talking about the obstacle is proof of residential address, is an ID. But if you're a foreigner and you legitimately in South Africa, a passport is acceptable as a means for having your data captured. Rural communities, they say there is a challenge, but the way the law is structured, even if somebody goes to a chief, as an example, and the chief in an affidavit confirms that I know this person, he lives in Block so-and-so, or in Eastcote to so-and-so, that is also acceptable as a substitute of what we'd call a proof of residence. There are a lot of issues that are challenging to South Africa, some within, some outside our control. The fact that the Department of Home Affairs has acknowledged that there is about 500,000 IDs lying idly within the department. They don't know how to hand them over to people. Levels of literacy are also a challenge. So even though the law says that you go to a chief or a headman to prepare an affidavit, that doesn't come through. But from our perspective as operators, we always find ways of making it simpler. Like we would have a standard form with everything. And literally when you go to it, if you have to sign it or stamp it. So we're trying all those means. But with all those obstacles, especially for rural South Africa, and I must say, Vodacom is also in markets other than South Africa. And what typically happens, Mozambique or DRC, we normally say when South Africa sneezes, the whole of Southern Africa catches the flu. But what happens, you have the same requirements around RICA, and I think the challenges in those countries are even much more onerous than South Africa. So, you know, I guess at some point, when we've completed the RICA object, as policymakers, as operators, would need to meet. These are the number of people that we've captured. We've disconnected so many people. From a policy point of view, what is it that can be done to address the situation? The way the law is structured, we believe that the 1st June come and then we haven't captured anybody, we'll basically have to disconnect people. And I think if there's any challenges, they'll probably be directed to the Department of Justice. And, you know, our defense would essentially be that we're complying with the law as it stands.
Thanks, Chairperson. The presenter is answering like the chairperson of the Command Council, if I can recognize him. He was the chairperson of the Command Council, where I was a part thereof. But I'm still holding my rank as a commissioner, he doesn't know. Well, my question is, you said you captured about 80% has been captured, and we are worried about 17%. My calculation tells me that I don't see your 3%. Where does this 3% lie?
Right.
All right, you just keep it, and you will get to it. Now, the other one, the other question you were saying, you short for two million, something of this sort. If you are giving that number, it means the cell phone, or you would tell us that it is something which a person must have. Because if you are saying two million, it means they must have those cell phones. I don't catch it in answer, but I'm sure you will explain. Thanks.
Yeah. Hello, I was just rounding off the number. But the real number would capture about 83% of our debt. And then outstanding would be about 17%. But we normally round them off to 20. Now, in real terms, the picture that we see means that one the real number. It's about 3.7 million people. And your question is that those people should have access to government. And I guess what you're trying to say, why is it impossible for us to reach them? Now we do reach them, we do communicate with them through SMS, IDR projects. But when you're talking about RICA has certain requirements that we need to capture to consider that customer. So one of the requirements is the physical address, or a business address, or an ID number. Now, what I was trying to explain is that having done this for the last 18 months, what is becoming very clear is that there is a number of people in South Africa who actually don't have an ID document, which means they can't get that ID number. There is equally a significant number of people, particularly in rural communities, who do not have a physical address, which basically means we can't comply with the requirements of RICA. And if you can't comply with the requirements of RICA, come the 30th of June 2011, we'll have to disconnect those people. And I was trying to explain that, you know, you can look at the issue from a commercial perspective and say, if for an example I disconnect 3 million people, I'm going to lose some revenue. But you have to balance that against a public and compelling public policy objective, which is the law enforcement agencies of the state are concerned about combating organized crime. So balancing those two competing public policy objectives, you would eventually have to say, well, the law says this, I'll have to disconnect them. And listed companies in particular, but I would say any company in South Africa, they don't want to be on the wrong side of the law, because if you're on the wrong side of the law, you create a perception in the market that there may be a lot of things that you do. Some might not be related to RICA, but it could be fraudulent activities. And the effect might be that the consumer, the public, won't trust your management. They won't trust your company. And the impact on your stock price can be devastating. So for as long as RICA exists as a law, we will comply with it. And given the 6 month period that we've been given as an extension, our commitment to the policymakers, Minister of Justice, is that we'll try and reach as many people as possible. But if we don't capture those people, we'll simply accept that either those people shouldn't be in South Africa, or for some reason they're engaged in certain activities, but quite conscious of the fact that some of those people, it could be that then parts of South Africa where they don't have access to information, or
they don't like notions of appearing before a headman and completing an affidavit. And, you know, some concerns that, for example, you pick up is that some people will never sign those affidavits. I'm making this some form of business. So they'll say, tell me to sign this affidavit, I need 100 rand. So that might be a barrier as well.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, we have to comply with the laws of the land as they are.
Yes, still, another day confits me now. The way both you and Department of Justice and Rarangani business. My problem is that Irula is the old thing in our people. But if come June we cut all of communication with the rural people, it's a problem to me. Here's my brother in your presentation. It's a King Goodwill written. There's no house in any urban area. He's staying in Wanongo. What happened in his cell phone if you cut off all of the people? What happened? Because you have a councillors is a government of the area, local government. Here in the country is wall-to-wall municipalities, 283 municipalities all over in the country. Is world to disparity. Councillors is the government of the area. I don't know. I'm still confused, but you and Department of Justice must play your card very clear to us.
Well, I think the appropriate people to address that issue would be DDG John Ragman, who I think would be speaking on behalf of Cabinet, on behalf of the Minister of Justice. But most importantly, I think he's been with this debate for as long as we have been, so he's familiar with the issue.
You can respond.
Yeah, Chair, let me just start off by saying that it is extremely difficult. The question of the requirements for registration, as has been indicated, has been on the table for a while. It was debated extensively in the Portfolio Committee and in the Select Committee during 2006 when this legislation was put on the table. The service providers at that stage had some concerns and expressed concerns. But Parliament decided that these were the requirements. The requirements that we have in the legislation at the moment for registration. And you will recall when we dealt with the amendment last year, I did indicate to the committee that the service providers have made certain suggestions to us to sort of soften the requirements. And they've referred to those suggestions in their presentations. All three of them did, actually. And they also indicated quite correctly that the law enforcement agencies are not in favor of reducing the requirements. What we have here, Chair, is quite clearly competing priorities. On the one hand, there is the priority of being in possession of communication instruments and communication in rural areas, but also in all other areas. But on the other hand, there is the requirement, the competing requirement or priority of dealing with crime and tracing of criminals. And that is why this legislation is on the statute book. And it's been on the statute book now since 2006. So since 2006, when the legislation was put on the statute book and debated in this parliament for about a year, the service providers knew exactly what it was that was required. And our feeling and to our mind, the Chair, they have had ample opportunity to ensure that everybody is registered. We've given them now a further 6 months. This Parliament has given them a further 6 months. To our mind, they should pick up on their registration processes, especially as has been indicated in rural areas. They should do more, and they should ensure that come the deadline of 30 June, that at least 99% of the people, especially in the rural areas, have been registered. It is correct to say that if they are not registered by that deadline, that that their phones will be disconnected, their cell phones will be disconnected. Of course, that does not mean that they will be entirely without without communication, because just the next day they can register. Just the next day, the 1st of July, they can register once again. And as has been indicated, once the phones have been, or let me put it this way, once there is an indication that we're extending the deadline, then people, you know, they sort of just relax and they will wait for the deadline to arrive. So at one or other stage, there must be this deadline. And as I indicated, they will be able to register again. The chair, the amendments that were suggested, we are looking at those amendments, and we might come to Parliament before the end of June. I'm not sure whether that is going to happen. We still have to consult with all the law enforcement agencies, and as I indicated, they, to our mind, it appears to us that they will not support any further amendments to those requirements, that they indicate that this is what they need to be able to trace people and to deal with crime. And we're talking here specifically about serious crime. We're talking about serious crime. And in terms of the Act, it is only applicable to serious crime, the interception of communication. So we're talking serious crime here. And the police really feel very strongly that they need this information for them to be able to do their job properly. But we will be looking at that. And as I say, we will have to advise our minister and advise cabinet on this issue. And if then appropriate, we will come back to Parliament. Just on the question of whether if a cell phone, the communication is stopped, whether that person can take us to court, that is always very difficult, because we have competing priorities here. So it's very difficult to sort of try to give an opinion on whether they will be successful or not.
I make a proposal about the concern with the rural people, because as a politician, as a represent these people from rural people in this parliament, for 454 people. I propose to you as a chairperson to call for 3 committees of parliament and a joint sitting to deal with that issue once more.
Madam Matila. Thank you, Chair. Yeah. I can see that the Vodacom has provided us with statistics. I'm not sure if you have broken the law, because that's what was indicated to us by the other service providers. Because that's what we needed to can make an informed decision. That is one area. Secondly, I think in terms of your presentation, I think I'm happy. I think you have done your best. You have reached 80%, and we hope that you reach the 100% that is required. Thank you, Chair. But I just wanted to understand as to whether you have broken the law, something is going to happen, and all those things, because that's what Cell C and MTN were saying to us.
I don't think we have broken the law. What do you want to believe MTN has broken the law? So what MTN has pledged was that they are trading in a closed period. So there are requirements of the Johannesburg Security Exchange. When you're in a closed period, there's certain information that you don't disclose if you let the people. And effectively, what that means is, if as an example, they were to tell you that their subscriber somebody would make a decision, and I think this top front, it's the best come the time where it would be particular, and therefore people would start spending because they have information in terms of the direction of the stock of MTN. Now, when they spend a closed period, MTN's results are generally released around March, and what would typically happen is any big tech company, 3 months before the results are announced, then basically can be sold the information in order to shape the views of your share dealer about the general price of the stock. Now, in the same vein, if Vodacom One during its presentation, let's say at the beginning of April, we wouldn't be at liberty to give this information. This information is at the end of January 2011. But if we're doing it in April, because what we'd have done, the year end of Vodacom, financial year end, it's the 31st of March. We typically release our results in June. Then you say between June, between April and June, you don't release price-sensitive information. And what price-sensitive information means doesn't give you the exact value of the price. Anything that will enable anybody by sharing in the stock exchange to estimate what the value of your share is going to be, either because the business is going on or it's going to stop, and at that point decide to sell the share. So what MTN said was not completely wrong, or it's not wrong at all. What they were trying to say is their results are going to be released in March, and because they're going to be released in March, they're not going to give any information that is likely to give a number of people some sense about the direction of the value of the share price. We would have done the same if it was April or May.
The representative of Vodacom is having a double cap now. That's good. That's business. That's good. Chairperson, it was a very good presentation from Vodacom. Even though we don't have the documentation in front of us.
What's your cell number?
082 451. It was a very good presentation. Don't write my cell because inmates are having it. You can you'll get it. Jefferson, you know, this 3.1 prepaid that is still not registered. You see, I hear that the presentation concentrating on rural areas. What is the... I know it's a difficult issue to answer me, but you know there's a lot of criminal syndicates out there. Do you not think that maybe criminal syndicates are part and parcel of this 3.1 million. You see, because it's true, Limpopo, I see Limpopo is a target. It's a target. but you know, this legislation is about, as the department is saying, targeting criminal syndicates, combating of crime. What is the situation when it comes to that?
Well, thank you, Honorable Member. The short answer is that it is possible, purely because the statistics that we're giving you is actually, we call it subscribers, but it's actually SIM cards. And a lot of people own a number of SIM cards, especially in the prepaid environment, purely because in the prepaid environment, I can take a number of SIM cards, either for criminal purposes or because of promotion, price, discount,
and those sort of things, then I would have at different stages Vodafone SIM cards, and at different stages MTN or Cell C or ATA or Virgin, you name them. I would have a number of SIM cards, and when we say we target rural areas, it's because it has been difficult for us because of either an ID or a residential address. But it is possible that by the time we get to June, you find that most of rural people actually have registered their SIM card. And that the people that have not registered is because they don't need to anyway, and if they do register, they are simply exposing themselves. So it's better for them to just simply get rid of the SIM cards and not bother to go and register. But because they use them time and again, between the operators, we have got what is called the deletion rule. That if after a number of 3 months, yeah, I think 3 months or 7 months, if somebody has not been using that SIM card, then you delete it. It no longer exists. Then that person will never use that SIM card anyway. Then they go and get another SIM card. So it is possible that in the 3.1 million prepaid SIM cards that come, if by May, let's say we still have about 1.5 million, it is possible that by June we may still have 1 million SIM cards that are not registered. And if you cut them, or some of them get eliminated through the deletion rule, number one, or number two, if you cut them, actually people just simply go and get another SIM card and then register on that SIM card. It's because it's historical, and we don't have records of those as compared to people that buy SIM cards now and we immediately register. Those historical is people using them periodically are still there and will be eliminated as a result. So it is possible.
Thank you. Let me also join my colleague to say the presentation of Vodacom was a bit comprehensive. One would get a picture of where you come from, where you are. You are able to say, is it 17% outstanding? So you are able to speak to say, how do we then intensify your program to reach out to 3.7 million? I think this is all what we wanted. How do we reach out to those 3.7 million outstanding? Which one would just have to make a recommendation that Vodacom must intensify its program, marketing, and reaching out to all sorts of things. It was not about pricing. It was only about that. So I would want to really congratulate Vodacom for that. However, this committee represents the law. It's the committee that passed this law. Because I get an impression as if we are not questioning who made the law, it's us. And then we want to know to what extent are we achieving what we have passed. And the people responsible is the department and service provider, and no one who accounts for us. Hence the department is here to clarify certain things. And where we have a recommendation to make, the department will take it to the cabinet to say the feeling was this, and the committee feels that maybe it can remove a hassle towards achieving recurring. And I think that is all about that. So as we make some of these questions, we are trying to see if the law that we have passed is the right one. And if it's not right, then the department will take the initiative to bring it back the other way right. But for now, we are indeed not going to postpone whatever. The cutoff date is cutoff date, and it must achieve its own objective. What would suggest indeed that the ball is in the service provider, the ball is in the department, but also to know that the recommendation of coming to play of other department, COCTA, traditional leaders, whatever. I think it can assist, but at what price? Because there's involvement of money. You need to fund the project in one way or another. But however,
I think if the approach of Vodacom could be taken by all, that would be important. The other thing is that it might be a question from Avon to the department. There's this other service provider called ETA. I'm not sure as to whether that service provider is also recurring or what. Is it recurring?
Yes.
If it's recurring, I think it must, at one stage or not, we must have a communication and engagement. No one, I don't believe there will be anyone to answer on their behalf, but I think in one or another, maybe our committee would have engaged to see how we can understand how far are they bringing their room. Thank you.
I can maybe help the Honourable Member. I believe when the fourth service provider actually came into being, the Act was already in force. The fact is that unlike the current service providers, who has historical customers, ATA does not have historical customers. So the Act will be applicable to them, but they will register progressively. So before you can actually make use of this service, you must register.
I think we have heard the presentations from the three providers, and I think we don't have to panic now because we are only entering the second month of the extended period. But it would seem to me that all the three providers still have a lot to do. I think we should agree that from here you are going to be very aggressive in ensuring that those who are still not yet registered are registered. And perhaps as you come next time to give progress report, because I didn't hear it during the presentation of the first two service providers, at least the Vodacom I came towards the tail end, but one would expect a situation where you say, between the time when the extension was granted and now, at that time, this was the figures, or this was the situation. From that time to now, this is how far we have moved, you see. So that we can see that there is some kind of a movement. One would expect that in your next visit before the actual date of the expiry of the extension period, you are able to say, even as Vodacom, although you will be during that close to whatever period you talk about, possibly, to say, from the 3.6 million or whatever millions you reported now to that particular meeting, this is the progress made, you see. Well, I think you will also have to make a lot of noise about the fact that come the 31st of June, those who have not registered, for whatever reasons, we note all the concerns of the rural people, but we will have to make noise about the fact that come the 1st of July, they will not be able to connect if they are not registered. Then, as to, and by that time, we'll know the figures, because I'm sure from the business point of view, you would also not want to use those particular customers. Hence, we are saying the ball is now in your court as a service provider to make sure that you register everybody, because you are in the business of getting people, much as government also is chasing the addresses and everything of these people for their other purposes. So on that note here, I think we should note this progress, but in the next meeting we should get a clear report as to the movement itself, because as it is now, it's like there's not been a movement except to say these are the challenges. Challenges will always be there. And we have come up with a number of suggestions as to how to do other things. And such will still be considered going forward. Maybe we should not panic now. We still have about 5 months to go, but put pressure on the service providers to be more aggressive.
What?
Chair,
I
just want to check whether the government has issued a new calendar, because the 31st of June will never come. That
Let me take the opportunity to thank the service providers, MTN, Cell C and Vodacom, and say we have noted your presentation and your proposals, and we hope to meet before the cut-off date, maybe early May, so that we can hear how far you have gone from today. And wish you all the best that you will cover a large number of those people who are attending. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Yes, honorable members, you don't have to leave. Hey.